All right, so we're going to start.
On
Mem Hey on the base, Tani Karavai, right?
That's fine.
Mitzayin and Oiso. Right? Mitzayin and Oiso, because it's Adama Shula Shah, they use clods of earth. I assume this is where Menachem got up to. Because it's the Shah, it's only temporary, right? It's only that year. Shall Arlo becomes the Chivraro, Shu Yosemikain. Arlo is a little longer. It's 3 years, right? And Kvaras Besij, the Yosemikain, of course, it covers a lot longer.
So the rain and all that kind of stuff will wipe out the Adama.
I guess so.
Alright.
And if you have to refresh it, you have to refresh it. Excuse me. If you had individual vines, so then you hang handles of jugs on them individually. Next, why don't we say that each one of the markers is according to what it is? In other words, clods of earth. Revai, white clay to Arla, lime to a grave. So in 4, he says, clods of earth signify Revai in the sense that just as you can have benefit eventually from the earth after plowing, sowing, and harvesting, so too, benefit can be derived from Revai once it has been redeemed. White clay signifies Arla because just as one can never derive agricultural benefits from clay, so too, you can never derive benefits from Arla. Lime alludes to a grave because it's white like the bones of a corpse. So these reasons are given apparently above a comma 69a, and he's wondering why the Bryce above gives the other reasons. Okay? Why don't they give other reasons? I mean, this is not exactly the questions that disturb me at night to keep me from sleeping, but that's the question that Yerushalmi is asking. Kadot etoni, ilan shel hekdesh sokrin oisei besikra. That we find other types of markers. So if you have a tree of hektish, so you want people to know you can't take the fruit, so what they do, they used to put a red, they used to paint it red, it says here. They painted it red. So it says here.
Same thing that they had on the Mizbeach.
Yeah, so it's because it's reminiscent of the Mizbeach. We're going to see soon. Bate Avodah Zarah, and if you had a house which is Avodah Zarah, which you can't have any hana from, so Mefachim and Osam B'Pchamim, they used to blacken it with coals. Bayis Menugah, coals, because a house of worship, of idol worship, has to be burned, right? Bezdin would do it, I assume it's referring to Bezdin. Bate Avodah Zarah, they do with the B'chomim, and the Bais HaMenugah, of course, if you had Saras in a house, Noisin Olav Efer Mikla, they put ashes of burnt wood on it. What's that? So it says, you should demolish the house. Upon being destroyed, the house is reduced to dust, which is equivalent of ashes. So both are prohibited from benefit. So they're marked to alert people. Okay. Now, what about Makom Horug? So they find a dead body in between two cities. So Badam, they mark it with blood. Let's see here. How do you mark it with blood?
They don't draw an outline.
They
do nowadays.
I guess if you're tough, like Rambo, you take your knife out and you slit your wrist and you pour blood out. But I don't think that's what it means over here, you know. Yeah. Let's see what it says in 9.
You can't use human blood.
In order for the great Sanhedrin to know where the corpse was found, the grave is marked with blood. Oh, interesting. The blood of an animal was used for this purpose, it says. Not the blood of the murder victim. Let's cut the guy up and pour blood so we have a mark in place. Alternatively, the grave was marked with blood to warn Kohanim to stay away. The grave is normally marked with lime. Nevertheless, in the case of the murder victim, blood is used so those that see it will pray that his murder will be avenged. That's what it says over here. How about that?
They just leave the body there forever?
They bury it there where it's found. Because Meis Mitzvah Koinem Akomo, that's usually what we say. And they just need to mark it so that the Sanhedrin can measure it later. You know, Anyway, in each of these cases, the marker relates to the specific prohibition it represents. Why did the earlier Brisa say that they were just chosen based on the length of time that they last? And this question remains unresolved, and hopefully you won't lose sleep over this question. I hope you have other questions or problems. The Gemara now raises a difficulty about the fact that the tree that was hektish was painted red. Here's a good one. Chash leimar, we should be concerned. What are people going to say? Because there was a general kind of like, I guess you could say it was an accepted practice. If you had a tree, it was a fruit tree, and it was the fruit of the tree were falling off the tree before they were ready. It's kind of like the tree was like, how you say it had ADD, you know, like an ADD tree, you know what I'm saying? Like
disposing of its
it was nervous and it would drop its fruit too soon. So what they do, they used to have this procedure here. It's going to say it right here. It's very interesting. Shema Elon Shahumanabo Peroisifu. If you're going to put red on the tree, maybe people will say this is a tree that's shedding its fruit prematurely. Vlakain Tony, there's a brisa that says, Elon Shahumanabo Peroisifu. What did they do with such a tree? Sokrinosa Vesikra. They would paint it red. And why did they do that? So people would pray for the tree that its health be restored. This is an Amayr de Gazach. I've heard of praying for friends that are sick, Nebuch, but I never heard of someone praying for a tree that it should get better. I mean, did you ever, like, if I put a red bindle on my car door, pray for my car, it should continue to run.
No, but then your car doesn't produce fruit.
Oh, yeah, my car is a special car.
Kid. Your car's Kid.
Martino knows some of...
Yes, from that show.
What show was that?
What is it?
The Kid. Whatever, the car was named
Kid. I don't know that show. I know the show. Okay, Martino...
Well, this over here, it's a tree of hektish we're talking about, so... No.
The Gemara is asking a question. There's this brisa that says that this is the way people used to treat trees that prematurely shed their fruit. So they had this custom to paint it red. So how are you going to paint a tree that's hektish red? Aren't people going to get mixed up and say that doesn't mean it's hektish? They're going to say this might be a tree that's been shedding its fruit, right?
Okay.
That's the kasha of the Gemara. Umatino said one of the other things they did was they used to burden it down with stones. You know, you have a tree that wants that's too full of energy. You got to give it a little more weight, you know, to work with. Umvahasin lay the avad to traumatize it so that it will produce fruit properly. Okay, so the Gemara says tamod liyater peiroi. The answer is like this: there it's so it will not shed the fruit prematurely that's growing on it. So the paint is applied after the tree has begun to bear fruit. Bram hocha di avad betchila. Here by a tree of hektish, they painted it right at the beginning of the growth. Okay?
So you see a tree that's painted red with no fruit on it, it's hektish.
It's hektish, correct.
Right.
Correct, exactly. Now, Rabbi Yonah Bai, lomalei non marin chut kuchut shal sikra zechel mizbeach. Why do we not say that a tree of hektish is marked with a line like the red line that surrounded the mizbeach? Remember that the oilas ha'if had the blood was lamata michut asikra, the chatas ha'if was lamala michut asikra. So there was this red line across the center of the mizbeach. So that's why. So kantatninon tamon chut shal sikra chodgri be'emsa. They had a red line red encircles the altar at the halfway point, to make a marker between the upper bloods, lower bloods. So what he's asking is the following. He says, it suffices to mark a tree of hektish with a single red line, and then it won't be mistaken for a tree that sheds its fruits, because that's entire trunk is painted red. So now he's telling us a different approach, right? You paint the whole trunk red, that way people see it, and they say, oh, Nebuch, this tree needs a refuah shleima. And then, as opposed to this one. So why didn't they answer that? Okay. That's another answer. Let's just say, it's not really a question, it's like, this is another answer.
Hektish, this white and red on the tree.
Excellent. So that's the third answer. Tani Reb Chiya, Sokrin Olav, Besikra, Hektish. What they used to write in red paint, they used to write the word Hektish. That's your answer.
Would it be easier to do that from the get-go?
You looked ahead. That's the third answer. Okay. So that's the story with the trees. Very good. Now we're going weiter. Now, we're on a memo of a base. I'm supposed to say that over here on the tape, as if anyone's ever going to listen to it.
I'm listening.
Who's
you? Mem
Vav on the base. 46 keys. Okay. I got the Vav. Thank you for joining. Rav Shimon Leo ruled in our Mishnah that trees of Ravoi and Arla need to be marked only during Shavuos. That's when people are allowed to take the fruit. But for the rest of the year, we say Halitei L'Rosh HaMiyamos. Who cares about them? Let them eat it, like they say in the vernacular, drop dead, so to speak, right? Now, there's another Mishnah over here. It says over here in the English, you have to read the introductory notes to understand the Gemara Vayter, that there's another Mishnah to my Paragimel Mishnah, that there's a Machlokes about another case. You have a guest in an inn who's a chaver. He gives his dough to the innkeeper, who's an Am Haaretz, to bake for him. She is suspected of exchanging her bread for his. And there's two approaches to why she's going to do that. Either because she feels, well, this guy's a Talmid Chacham. I'd rather him eat my good, nice, hot, warm bread, better quality, and I'll take his and I'll eat his. That's one way. That means that she's a tzaddikus. The other approach is she's the opposite. She's a Chalerian. She says, why should he eat hot bread? I'll eat his hot bread and give him my garbage bread. And whatever it is, whether she's nice, whether she's not nice, she's suspected of switching, right? So therefore, since she is suspected of switching, my mouth is not operating. Since she is suspected of switching, that's a lot of S's. Therefore, the chaver has to take challah off before he gives her his bread to work with, right? That's what it says over here. So the Tanakhama requires the guest to tithe as though, to take the miser. I'm sorry, not challah, to take miser. Reb Yosi holds this is not necessary because taking his dough would be theft. You're not required to prevent the thief from the consequences of his action. So we have this machlokes tanoim, which is very reminiscent of our Mishnah here. Again, our Mishnah says the two shittos are who. Tanakhama says take off. What does it say? Mark it all the years of the Shemitah. And Rav Shem Begamliel says, no, only during Shavuos, the rest of the years, let him eat it and forget about it. And that seems to be, who's like who? So he's like, so Rav Shem Begamliel is like Rav Yosi, right? So the Gemara says, that's what the Gemara says, Rav Yosi for Rav Shem Begamliel on Mudavar Echad. They both said the same idea, right? Just like Rabbi Yossi said over there in Demai, we don't care about the Ramayim. Just they're exactly the same. So the Gemara says, no, it's not really comparison. The Stavra, Rabbi Yossi yodil Rabbi Shem Gamliel lo yodil Rabbi Yossi. The Gemara says that it doesn't work. Rabbi Yosi Taka will agree, but Rabbi Shimon Gamliel will not agree to Rabbi Yosi. And the Gemara explains why is that. Rabbi Yosi Yoidi the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Einon Rach on the Ramayim. There we're not achray for people who are Ramayim who are stealing Rabbi because Rabbi Yosi ruled even though the guest actively handed over his dough to the innkeeper. In other words, he's talking about how did the innkeeper get the dough? It came Biratsono, the chaver handed it willingly over to the innkeeper, so it came to her derech heter. So if he holds that even though it came into her hands with my rotzen, I still don't have to be worried about her taking it. So kol shekein, if you're a ganef and you're coming into my backyard and stealing my stuff where it's coming into your rishus illegally, surely I'm not responsible for what happens. That's the Gemara's logic. In other words, there's more of a svara to say what? That we look at how it got into your rishus. Therefore, the second side is understood. Rav Shimon Gamliel lo yodil Rav Yosi because Shein Derech Chaver Lo Hitzin Beis Adam Shein Masukon because it's only where what? It's only where something, produce is going into the guy's shus without my permission. So maybe it's only by netar avayi and orla or whatever.
They're coming
to my rishus and taking their. That's why he says halat hila rosh of yomus. But for the chaver to give his dough to the innkeeper out of his possession, that's already a responsibility. Okay? Next. Try to mute your machine, please. Shall kvaros and a site of graves is marked. Minayin, let's see. Now the Gemara is going to go through. How do you know there's a din of tzin kvaros? I think this is a Gemara in Moed Katan that talks about this also. How do you know there's a din? Is it in Moed Katan or Bava Basra? I forget exactly. So the Gemara says, Rebrechi Rav Yaakov Bar Bas, Yaakov B'Shem Rav Kunya Devras Chavron. There's a bunch of names here that they all have the same idea. They all say that they came from Chavron. So Chavron.
Either Beit Horon.
Beit Horon mentioned Yeshua. Others say it's Chavron and Yecheskel, however it is.
Ezekiel.
Whatever. Wherever it is, I don't know where it is. Rabbi Yisrael Allah, Rabbi Yaakov Baruch B'Shem Rechanan Yidras Chavron, Rabbi Kiske Rabbi Uziel Breid Rav Kunya Yidras Chavron B'Shem Kunya Yidras Chavron. Whatever. I don't understand what this is. What's with all these names? I wasn't understanding what the point of this was. They found the source for Tzion Kfaris from the following pasuk from Tomei Yikra, that if he's a Metzorah, then he has to call out to tell people not to come close to him. I'm Tomei, stay out of my Dalamas, right? Kadesh Tei Tuma Kor L'Chom V'Fiha. The Tuma will be calling out for Emeras L'Chaprosh, keep away. So that'll be a Mokar to say, stay away from this Mokar of Tuma, right? Seeing first. Rav Hila B'Shem Rav Shmuel Bar Nachman V'Avroa Evan Be'Eretz V'Ra Etzim Adam V'Vonim Etzla Tzion. Again, it says in Pasuk, where is this Pasuk? It's 14. It is in Yechezkel. So it says over here on the bottom, there's the Mochama of Gog and Magog. Eretz Yisrael will be littered with corpses of Gog's army. And this is assuming that these are Jewish corpses. This is one point we have to mention over here. When we say that you have to be Mitzayan kever, we're only Mitzayan things that are Mitame Ba'ohel. Okay, this is an important point. So even though if you have a piece of a bone, an Etzem Kisora, and you touch that bone and you become Tame, but an Etzem Kisora is not Mitame Ba'ohel. And therefore, if you had an Etzem Kisora, you would not have to mark.
So it has to be a whole.
One of the cases that is that if you have a whole skeleton or a whole skull, then those are matan b'ayil. Or, of course, if you have a whole kazayas min ameis, it's matan b'ayil also.
Right.
So these are things that
just talking about bones.
So my point here is like this. So if the Gog army is Goyim, Goyim, as you know, are not matam v'ayil. They're only matam v'maga. So it's really it would be like kind of difficult to bring a raya that you have to mark. You have to have seen kfaris from the example of Gog. That's what we have to understand over here. Okay, so let's take a look what it says over here. Again, so in 14 it says that in the aftermath of the future war of Gog and Magog, when Eretz Yisrael will be littered with the corpses of Gog's army, that even after the land has been largely cleansed, whoever sees a remnant bone shall build a marker near it until it is gathered up and buried in the valley of Gog's hoard, whatever that is. The Gemara interprets this verse as teaching that we should mark Tuma so people keep away from it. This is not the verse's plain meaning, however, for it describes a situation where a marker is not needed, right? The law requiring markers is only for things that are through oil. Okay? And since such a source could be contaminated a person even if it was buried, it must be marked to alert people to keep their distance, not to even walk over it. So, okay, so we're seeing a halach over here. So if you bury a dead body and it's 3 feet under, and you walk over that grave, it is metameyu, because the rule is, tumah b'kasva ila l'rikia. The only time that it would not be metameyu is if there was a tefach of space that was created over the kever, in which case the tumah would only hit the top of the kever and wouldn't go up any further. I think that's correct. But anyway, without getting into the details.
So in our kever, because there's space.
We usually have a tefach.
Yeah. Right.
Until it collapses. All kvarim collapse after a couple of years, yeah. But if the source does not convey tumah through ohel, burying it suffices since that prevents it from being metame. Okay? Because you're not going to touch it. So an ordinary bone from one of Gog's soldiers would not transmit tumah through ohel. Furthermore, according to some opinions, non-Jewish corpses, even if they're whole, don't transmit tumah via ohel. Okay? So, nevertheless, by mentioning a marker, the verse alludes to the requirement that corpse tumah, which can contaminate even after the corpse is buried, must be marked. Okay, so this is like, it's not a perfect raya. You just have to understand what the raya is and understand all these halachas. In terms of tumah, I think it's important to understand this. Okay, next. Now we're going to go to the next words in the verse. Adam. So it's Vara etzem Adam, right? They're going to see the etzem of a person. You make a marker for the spinal column or the skull. I think it's either or. I don't think it has to be both. Does it have to be both? What does it say over here? A complete spinal column containing all the vertebrae and a complete skull. Each convey tumma by way of ohel. I think each means each one individually. Right?
Yeah.
So it's or. Uvona he shall build. So over here it's saying, if you're going to spread your lime over a stone that was put there to mark the grave, the only time you'll do that is if the stone was a permanent stone. If the stone is such that it will move, so then you're going to really make things, you're going to make a problem. What's the problem? The problem is that if the stone moves away and people are going to see lime on the stone and then they touch truma on the stone, they're going to think, oh, the truma became tameh, I got to burn the truma. And they'll be burning it not necessarily, which is not good. So that's why we'll only mark the stone if it's a permanent stone. Okay? Im imar at al telusha, because if you're going to, that's the Gemara says this, af hi holechasim v'tameh v'mokam acher, then it'll be matami someplace else where it won't, where there's no tumah, and therefore we don't do it. Okay, that's what I just said. Etzlo, b'makom tara, that what? The marker is next to it. In other words, not above it. The verse is saying it's next to it in a place of tara, not on top of the tumah, slightly to the side. Okay. Because the point is, he says on the bottom in 20, the point here is that by the time I get to the marker, I'm already on top of this of the tumah. I'm too late, so therefore they put it a little bit away from it, so that I have a warning. Okay. Next, Sion a marker, mikam letzion. So you see, your marker is required. Tony, what's seven after Sion? See if you find a single stone.
Are you changing?
Oh, that's 47A. You know what? We'll start here a new recording. Just 1 second. Thank you very much for reminding me, because I forgot.